The big elections between presidential election years can be a mixed bag. In general, they do not get the attention and excitement of those leap year elections. This year's elections in both states, though, will feature a number of items to get voters excited. Those include Jackson County's vote on a countywide ban on genetically modified or GMO crops, ballot measure 15-119. Last week, we heard from the chief petitioner and company about the reasons for a ban. Today, we continue our examination of election issues with the no side on the GMO ban. Our guest is John Watt. He represents the Good Neighbor Farmers. And John, will you say you're a lobbyist? Is that your full-time job?
A lobbyist and consultant, Jeffrey.
All right. Well, good to have you back on the Jefferson Exchange.
Nice to hear from you.
Just on its face, for the people who are wary of GMO crops, and there's a level of fear here, obviously, why oppose a measure to ban them within Jackson County?
Well, Jeffrey, I think we're looking at this from what happens to the taxpayers. This is a measure that I don't think they simply can afford. And remember, when we're dealing with ballot measures, legislation, words mean things. You have to look at what the words say, not the intent of what is put forward. And I learned that lesson many years ago in working in that process. And
I should have explained, you are a former state legislator and active in the Republican Party at the time.
Now that's really going to upset a lot of your listeners. Thank you so much for that. But I am a resident of Jackson County. I've been here since 1982. I've lived in Oregon all my life, and one of the stable functions that we've had in Oregon is our natural resource base. So I've lived around farmers and ranchers and people who work in the timber industry all my life. Nonetheless, my legislative experience has told me through experience that when you pass a law or when you write a law, you need to understand fully what the implications of that are going to be. Now, that's very, very hard. But as we found out yesterday in the report from Mr. Jordan at the county, who's gone through and evaluated this, that there could be very dire consequences to not only the entire county, but certainly the farming community. Now, I want to make something very, very clear, Jeffrey, right from the beginning. The people that I represent support all types of agriculture in Jackson County. They support organic growers, and they support conventional growers and want everyone to be able to succeed. The key to that, as it always has been in farming in Jackson County and in Oregon, is cooperation and the ability to coexist. Breaking it down to the measure itself, as I said, the consequences of this could be dire. Now, I'm sure that everyone who's listening this morning wants me to debate whether or not GMOs are good or whether they're bad or whether they're harmful or whether they're going to put someone out of business. I'm not a scientist. I can't do that. We'll have to leave that up to a lot smarter people than I am who do those things for a living. And I think we need but go to the internet and we can find all kinds of studies that are going to tell us what we want to hear. The issue is simply twofold. We can't afford this measure in Jackson County, and we should be cooperating with one another so that we all can coexist.
All right, on issue number one, and I want to flesh out what you just referenced, Danny Jordan, the county administrator, went before the Jackson County commissioners yesterday at their request and provided some information about what he thought the impact would be if 15-119 passes. And what he said was probably $219,000 a year in staff and training and some possible other consequences, financial and otherwise, things like medical marijuana. Some could be banned if this passes, because that would be a GMO strain. Some lawn grass could be banned, et cetera. $219,000 doesn't sound like a great deal of money in a county budget.
Well, I think that was just the hard cost for operating, but that didn't include the possible abatement cost, Jeffrey.
All right.
That's where the real cost could be.
Mm-hmm. All right. The let's take some phone calls here. We have John Watt on the line representing the Good Neighbor Farmers. This is the no on the GMO ban in Jackson County side. Let's go first to Ray in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with John Watt. Ray?
Oh, good morning. You kind of cut out on me there.
Here we are.
I wonder if your guests could be more specific about the costs and where I'm coming from. Coming back to the county administrator's statement yesterday, as an example, he had concerns about the need to hire coordinators that, you know, technical people that could become involved in doing the testing. And I'm wondering, you know, as a level of education and information, are these folks in the county aware that the detection methodologies, for example, are being practiced in our local high schools and taught to our children there without really needing to hire any consultants? Maybe they could funnel a little bit of money to our local schools to assist them in their needs. Maybe they could hire the schools as a consultant. And secondly, I have to laugh about your guest comment about let's work together, let's involve the coexistence concept. Are these folks not aware that the United States Department of Agriculture has just finished a national search among all of Americans asking for feedback on how we can make this process work? It hasn't worked for 14 years. That's why we are where we are at this moment on the ballot. Coexistence doesn't work.
All right, let's get a response.
Are they not aware of the ban in Willamette Valley, temporary ban on growing Roundup-resistant canola to protect other seed crops? Come on, this is going on within our own state.
All right, Ray, thank you. Let's get a response from John Watt. John, go ahead.
That was a pretty broad statement. I'm not sure how many questions were in there. First of all, with regard to testing, I'm not the county administrator. I don't know exactly how he's going to go about that. But what he did say, and I know Mr. Jordan is very thorough when he goes through these things, that there are no testing facilities in the state of Oregon that have the ability to do that. And for the suggestion to go back to the schools, while I appreciate our school system and the great educational possibilities we have in Oregon, I'm not sure that there would be a great deal of faith in school kids being able to test these highly scientific crops. With regard to the comment about cooperation and coexistence, I'm certainly going to have to disagree because farmers have been doing this for years and years and years. I think I know the study that the caller was referring to, and quite honestly, the bottom line on that study was the encouragement of coexistence. So we're going to have to disagree on that point.
The concept of coexistence, I mean, you can probably at least see the other side in the sense of, I believe what they're saying is, if your stuff changes our stuff, it changes forever. Our stuff is not likely to change your stuff.
Oh, Jeffrey, that's not true at all. Pollen drifts both ways. And I know that's been one of the primary arguments that somehow, and pollen can corrupt conventional crops. If the species has the ability to cross-pollinate, and if we're talking about GMOs here specifically, with regard to sugar beet and chard, the pollen from the chard can drift over and cross-pollinate with the sugar beet, thus destroying their crop as well. In addition to that, there has been absolutely no evidence whatsoever in Jackson County of any crops being cross-pollinated at this point in time. So if the two sides are willing to talk to one another, talk about their planting times, talk about their harvesting times, people can get along that way, and they have been doing it. I spoke with a lady just last night who was talking about her brother-in-law who grows GMO alfalfa, and is next door to a neighbor who grows conventional alfalfa, and they've been doing it and coexisting for the last 10 years.
John Watt, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, representing the Good Neighbor Farmers Group, which is against the Jackson County GMO ban on the May ballot. Here's Brian in Ashland. Welcome to the Exchange.
Oh, hi. A couple things. Thanks for being let me be on the show. Number one, the Good Neighbor Farmers is not local farmers. They have a budget of nearly $300,000, and 98% of it's come from out of this county, mostly Midwestern sugar companies, like the Texas Farm Bureau. What do those people want to do with local Jackson County dirt? Ask yourself that question. Now, number two, Good Neighbor Farmers is also rude because the GMO growers here are not good neighbors. I mean, prior to July 2012, there were GMO sugar beets being grown here, and the USDA permit required four-mile separations as a condition of the permit. And yet those spots were all over the county, just hardly 4 miles apart. And finally, check with Chuck Burr, the Southern Oregon Seed Growers Association. They tried to coexist. They tried up 6 months of meetings, which John Watt encouraged in front of the county commissioners. And in response to that, they gave it a good faith try. And what happened? The GMO interests here literally abandoned the process because it didn't meet their business model. They're not good neighbors. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that, Brian. Appreciate it. John, a couple of points there. The first one, though, is the out-of-area stuff, which has been remarked upon before. We did get a chance to look at the contribution and expenditure reports, and there is money from the Texas Farm Bureau or the Texas Sugar Beet Growers. Anyway, there's money from several states is the point. Can you comment on that part first?
Well, I'm sure you had an opportunity to look at their contributions as well, and you've noticed some things that are coming from out of state. This is a concern to farmers all over the country. These threats are not just going on here. They're going on everywhere, and the organizations who are contributing this to this campaign are worried about the implications of passage here in Jackson County, because it could implicate or affect them in the future.
So this is a battleground, essentially, and everybody's interested.
It is a battleground, and I'll tell you, as a longtime Jackson County resident and a lifelong Oregonian, I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed to see this battleground forming in Jackson County, because we have had a history of a willingness and a proven history to work together.
Let us. And what about the other part, though? Well, let me take another call, because I think this addresses it as well. John and Eugene, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with John Watt, representing the no side on Jackson County's GMO crop ban.
Hi. I almost feel like I'm invading the county's exchange of comment here, being out of county. Those are really good comments against this gentleman's position. I just want to remind people of the precautionary principle and the idea that the burden of proof that things are safe should be on the promoters of something here, GMO crops. We in the United States live in this kind of end times of the free enterprise system where the profit motive rules, money rules. It doesn't matter what the real problem of contamination is, it's the God Almighty dollar. They should have to prove scientifically that there's no problem going to ensue here from contamination from GMO crops, and they can't.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not allowed to, they're not held to that kind of standard. It's more of this even-handed exchange where they're two positions and they're sort of equal somehow. But there's great danger here, and he's not addressing it.
All right, John, thanks for the comments. I appreciate that. So, John Watt, is the money getting ahead of the science here?
Well, you're going to have to get the results of the election from Jackson County voters who are going to be asked to fund this program in lieu of the programs that the commissioners are already debating on whether or not they're going to be able to afford. We're one of those timber-dependent counties in the state who is losing revenue on an annual basis. Fortunately, through the fiscal responsibility of our leaders in the county, we do have some reserves. They're eating into those reserves. This just creates another government bureaucracy that's going to cost the county money in one way or another. So in that light, yes, this is about money.
The earlier caller making the reference to some attempt at cooperation and coexistence, which you say the Good Neighbor Farmers are for, how much effort has there been to talk this over before it got to the point of putting a measure on the ballot?
Well, from what I've been able to ascertain, for the people who are growing some of the GMO crops, there was a very real effort to contact each and every one of the folks who are growing organic crops around them. Now, we're getting into a he said, she said thing. They say one thing, we say the other thing. Who are you going to believe? I believe an honest effort was made on the part of these folks to work with their neighbors and to move their crops if necessary. If inadvertent cross-pollination was made, there was an effort to pay for those crops, which was rejected, by the way. So I really believe there has been an effort to do this. As we go forward, I guess the next thing we'll have to figure out is whether or not this ballot measure will pass or will fail, and then we're simply going to have to go from there.
Another call here from Kent in Rogue River. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with John Watt, who is the represents the no on Jackson County's GMO ban. Go ahead, Kent.
Good morning, John. I am interested in, are you a farmer?
No, sir, I'm not a farmer. Are you?
Proceed,
Kent. Yes, I am. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I actually was at the Seed Growers Association when this so-called effort at cooperation occurred. What happened was a representative of the Syngenta Corporation, who basically is probably the main funder of Good Neighbor Farmers, showed up at the meeting and said that they wanted to have as many votes as they had small seed plots. And these small seed plots that Syngenta runs are basically pieces of people's lawns, little corners of fields, very small areas. Each one of those people was to be a farmer, and they were to have votes. Syngenta was going to have 30 or 40 votes. And when the farmer said, wait a minute, leasing property in your lawn is not farming, and we want farmers to vote, Syngenta, with all the representatives, stood up and walked out of the meeting because they said that wasn't according to what they wanted to do.
All right.
How is that cooperation?
All right. Thank you for that, Kent.
Kent, thank you for that question. I wasn't at that meeting, so I can't comment on that. But what I can comment on is the measure itself. What's happened in the past has happened in the past. We have ballot measure 15-119 before us, and we have to look at what that measure will require. Notwithstanding what happens in counties in California, this is not California, I don't know what those ballot measures cited. What I do know is what ballot measure 15-119 is requiring here in Oregon. And based on the comments from the county administrator yesterday, there could be a cost that will go out to Jackson County voters either in the loss of programs or the increase in taxes somehow. That's going to cost us, and it's simply a cost we cannot afford.
Increase in taxes, how would that happen without another vote?
Well, it probably couldn't, but Jeffrey, this is going to have to be paid for in some way. So then if it came to a vote for more taxes and that didn't pass, the likelihood would then be that existing programs funded by the county would no longer exist.
All right, this is law.
This is law. This is not something that may or may not happen. Jackson County is pretty good at following the law, not just parts of it, but the whole law. So that's something you're going to have to take up with the county.
Let's take another call. Here's Anna in Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with John Watt, who represents the no on Jackson County's GMO ban ballot measure.
Yes, thank you. I'm really concerned about all the comments about what this is going to cost the county. What was talked about yesterday was what could happen. It was not saying what would happen. And to me, this sounds like a lot of scare tactics to get people afraid about what might come down the line. It was also said that it might not have these kind of expenses, but that's not being focused on. And in fact, there are the four counties in California that have had similar ordinances, and there have been no costs at all. So to emphasize and to keep telling people there's going to be all these extra expenses, I think is just really trying to stir up some kind of fear that's really not based in reality. And I think the people of this county, I hope, are smart enough to not just be swayed by these kinds of arguments. So thank you. Oh, and I do want to say this stuff about the cooperation. I know many of these farmers, and they were not contacted to let them know about these GMO crops coming in, and the 4-mile buffers that were in place at the time were not respected. So I think that needs to be taken into account. Thank you.
All right,
you.
Anna, thank you for that. John, your response?
Yeah, Anna, thank you for that. And I think that scare tactics are working two ways. We've been hearing for over a year and a half now, or 2 years, that GMOs are bad for your health. GMOs may pollinate crops. We've heard a lot of this, and you're exactly right. With regard to the county, this is something that may happen or may not happen. Is that a chance that the voters in Jackson County and the taxpayers are willing to take? It may cost them a lot of money.
John Watt is representing the Good Neighbor Farmers, which is the no on Measure 15-119 side. 15-119, the GMO crop ban on Jackson County's May 20th ballot. John Watt himself, a former legislator, lobbyist, consultant. John, thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
You're welcome, Jeffrey. Good to talk with you.
Same here. That'll do it for this hour of the Exchange. We will come back in hour number two and talk about the war on drugs with somebody who opposes it.